Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
So just as one major election concludes, another one is about to begin. Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor with the Irish Independent, is here with me in the studio. On the line we have Dr. Teresa Reedy, political scientist at University College Cork. The general election is now a certainty for Friday, the 29th of November. So Fionnán, will we talk about what's going to happen in the coming hours? Because we're not at the point yet where the campaign has started proper, but it will do very soon.
No, you're not technically allowed to put up posters until tomorrow at about lunchtime, when Simon Harris will eventually make his way to Áras an Uachtaráin. So he heads to Budapest today. There are two important European leaders' meetings there. One is from the broader European family, 44 different countries coming together, and then an EU summit dinner tonight. And largely speaking, they will be discussing the implications for Europe from the election of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. both security and economic, at those meetings. Those are the main items of the agenda. Hosted by Viktor Orban, hardline Hungarian Prime Minister, pretty much Eurosceptic and quite close to Trump. So there's important international affairs that he does have to deal with. He'll leave that early tomorrow. They're talking about competitiveness in the morning. He'll duck out. He'll head back to Dublin Airport. And as of now, depending upon flights coming off on time and landing in time, he'll head to government buildings, make a speech, say, "I'm now calling a general election," back across the city to Áras an Uachtaráin to ask President Michael D. Higgins to formally dissolve the Dáil. Then he'll go for a bit of an old canvas, probably in West Dublin, and then back across the city again to the Aviva Stadium for Ireland versus the All Blacks. So very much frantic Friday for Simon Harris, and then that kicks off events
then
formally.
We're there. Yeah. So, Teresa, like, we have heard the government saying over the last number of months that the Dáil will run its full term, and the government parties have clearly decided now that the mandate has been delivered. Does the election date itself, though, the 29th of November, does it have an element of peril? Like, would we expect to see a government formed by Christmas, and what are the implications if it's not?
Government formation by Christmas now is probably optimistic. If we look at what's been happening over the last couple of elections, our politics has become more fragmented. We have a lot more small political parties and additional independents. And all of that means that the coalition negotiations are a degree more complicated. There aren't as many obvious outcomes from elections anymore. I think what's much more likely is that the parties will be hoping for a reasonably clear result, and then there'll be a quieter Christmas period where some of the more difficult negotiations can be done. And heading into the new year, I think we'd probably hoping for government formation. I think it's quite tight to expect that before Christmas. Mm-hmm. But a lot will just depend on the outcome of the election. And we need to remember 2020 was unusual because of the pandemic, which meant that there were all kinds of additional regulations and rules governing how the negotiations happened. But nevertheless, it was a complicated outcome. And that's the general direction that politics has been going in.
Let's come back then, Fionnán.
There seems to be a provisional plan to have a sitting of the Dáil at the very least before Christmas, which would let parties set out their stall in terms of who they may or may not vote for. As Taoiseach, you may well have a vote that would fail on that occasion. And then, as Teresa said, you go off into your coalition parties.
But makes sense to have the quieter time to work out the hard stuff.
One hangover out of the events of the last 24 hours, Simon Harris proves he is a true blue Fine Gael leader. He joins Liam Cosgrave, Gareth Fitzgerald, John Bruton, Enda Kenny, Leo Varadkar in terms of making a complete hames of calling a general election.
How so?
Well, so, his junior coalition partner, Roderick O'Gorman, announced the date nearly 3 weeks ago. Micheál Martin got out ahead of him in terms of even announcing when the election was going to be called. So Fine Gael had been making a big deal over the past month that, well, it's the Taoiseach's prerogative, and the Taoiseach will be the one telling people when the election is going to be, and he'll be the one who called it. And now he's basically kind of a bit of an afterthought. So he dawdled around on it for so long. He should have followed the path of his mentor, Bertie Ahern back in 2002, wandered into the Dáil one night and said, I'm calling the election tomorrow, and caught everybody on the hop, even though it was expected.
Yeah, I mean, this all plays into where I want to go next with the campaign, you know, because it's all about stealing a march on the other side, particularly with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, because they are going to have to now present themselves as individual parties to the electorate. And how do they do that, apart from being the leaders being a bit tetchy with each other, which we've seen a little of over the last few weeks?
Yeah, and do they? Because there's a dangerous balancing act here for Fianna Fáil in particular. On the defensive perspective, Fine Gael are deliberately targeting his seats up along through Dublin and the commuter belt. Stephen Donnelly, Cormac Devlin, Jim O'Callaghan, Paul McAuliffe, they're all being targeted directly by Fine Gael. You could argue the same for Chrissy O'Sullivan and Andreas Moynihan down below in North and Southwest Cork, Joe Flaherty in Longford. So Fine Gael going after those seats, and yet at the same time, Fianna Fáil need transfers if they're going to pick up seats. So Martin Daly and Roscommon, Timmy Dooley and Clare, Chap Clear in Kilkenny, Deirdre O'Keefe down in East Cork. They'll only get elected off the back of Fine Gael transfers. You can't absolutely afford to alienate the Fine Gael vote because you're going to need them to come back to you. So there is this fine balancing act. Micheál Martin is running out onto the pitch like a retired junior B footballer coming back out for one last time and throwing belts and punches.
He'd be delighted
and
to hear that.
Shoves all over the place and desperately trying to pick a fight, where Fine Gael are being more subtle, pointing out, oh, look at young Simon Harris, and he's that Micheál Martin, oh, he's a very nice elderly man, and he's been a TD since Simon was a little toddler. So listen, the people have a clear choice here. Do they want the youth and exuberance of young Mr. Harris, or do they want the steady old hand of Micheál Martin? And they're doing that less than subtly. What we're yet to see, though, is how do they differentiate themselves on policy grounds, apart from approach? The general approach is fine. Fianna Fáil can say we would do differently on housing and justice. But what exactly is the fine line, or the wide line that differentiates the actual policy position that each party has?
And the problem, the issue that compounds that, is because they have presented themselves as very cohesive over the last almost 5 years. Now you've got to come to the end, to the action campaign, and say, actually, we have very different ideas about the issues that you're concerned about. It's a hard one to sell, isn't it?
It's backfired on parties in the past. You can go in too close to your coalition partner, and if you're the smaller party, you'll suffer. You get eaten. Fine Gael have done that with Labour in the past. On the other hand, you can start picking fights, and then you lose out because you saw what happened to the PDs back in 2007, the Greens in 2011, Labour in 2016. So there is that difficulty, and Micheál Martin is clearly deciding, no, I need to separate myself from Simon Harris at this point.
Well, listen, let's talk about the issues. And there's always a danger, isn't there, Teresa, as we head into an election campaign, that the things that we think are going to dominate don't. But it does seem, from where we are now, that housing and immigration will be top of the list, also cost of living too.
I think so, and I think we have some good indications from earlier this year. Usually we think of the local elections as midterm elections kind of happening somewhere in the middle of the term. In fact, this time around, the local elections were only 6 months ago. So we do have some good insights in terms of what are the critical issues that are of concern to voters at the moment. And as well, and we add that into the picture of the polls over the last couple of years. And housing and homelessness has really been out front. At times, yes, it was overtaken by migration issues, but by and large, housing has been the settled most important issue for voters for quite a long period of time. Now, we have a lot of election data and a lot of opinion and analysis, because the National Election and Democracy Study was conducted at June elections, and we know, for example, in 2020 that voters that considered housing to be their most important issue were much more likely to vote for Sinn Féin. That picture had diversified a little bit. Sinn Féin retained their lead, but voters who consider housing and homelessness important are also voting for some of the other political parties, including the government parties. Where the government probably is strongest is in relation to economic issues. and particularly inflation and the cost of living for voters that say they're concerned about managing the economy, they're much more likely to vote for the government parties. And potentially, given the kind of background to the calling of this election, it might be a little bit easier for the government to at least start the election on economic terrain, because there's questions about the Trump election, how that's going to affect the Irish economic model. But the German government collapsed overnight, again, amidst much economic turmoil. So there will certainly, that will help the government going into the campaign. But governments don't control campaigns. Issues will arise, and the all the opposition parties are going to put forward their manifestos. So it's a combination of competing for space. So we'd expect a lot more issues to come out over the course of the campaign.
Okay, well, Donald Trump may have an influence over this campaign, and he won't have intended it, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But Theresa mentioned Sinn Féin there, going in because of the recent controversies as underdogs. That might suit Mary Lou McDonald, though.
Yeah, she still has a number of issues to her advantage. The campaign will be shaped as issues arise, and you know, probably doesn't suit Sinn Féin for immigration to become a dominant force in the campaign. Same with Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. But if housing becomes a formidable part of this campaign, then you know, Sinn Féin can outline their position. I don't think they're going to come from nowhere, though, this time. Certainly the two main government parties are going to see where they're coming from a long way off, so they should be well prepared for them. She also has the advantage that a lot of her TDs do have a sizable comfort blanket underneath them. They have potential, even on a fairly average day, for additional seat gains. Louis O'Hara over in Galway, Conor McGuinness in Waterford, Anne Graves in Dublin Fingal. So there's even gains that they can make off even a half decent result on the day.
Based on the 2020 results, is that what you're saying?
No, even well below the 2020 results, yeah. They can still pull off seats like those and hold very many others around the country as well. They don't have very many retirements, and where they do, they've got, you know, Joanna Byrne in Drogheda, a really good replacement for Imelda Munster. So they've a fairly stable ticket. At the same time, their ambitions have been quelled. They're no longer talking about third seats with Owen O'Brien in Midwest. Pearse Doherty in Donegal not looking for a third seat either. So it's like in a lot of places they're defending their position. They also, I suppose, have the advantage that if the debate over the course of the campaign comes down to, yeah, the economy is one thing, but the fruits of the economy are the other, they can still punch holes there. So not over by a long shot. And also you have to bear in mind, Mary Lou McDonald does enter this campaign with a legitimate call that she can become Taoiseach. Whatever way you look at the numbers, ultimately she goes in pretty much level from the last general election with the other two main parties. We've very rarely been in that position. So she can still argue that she presents an alternative to the civil war parties.
Okay, Theresa, let's talk about the smaller parties then in this campaign. We have the parties on the left, and it is said of them that, you know, they have difficulties agreeing and coalescing and so on. Do you think that's going to change this time out, that they might see that they can create a viable coalition on the left, that maybe they might be able to go in as a third part to any coalition government, a number of them together?
There aren't really any strong signs of that happening right now, and if it was to emerge, we'd really have to see it in the next week. I mean, really, we're talking here about the Social Democrats and the Labour Party, and both parties, but particularly the Social Democrats, get quite irritated these days when they're asked about, you know, their positioning vis-a-vis the Labour Party. Certainly, as a combined force, they have the potential to have much greater impact, but there are historical reasons for why they're separate political parties. I suppose probably what we will see is an arrangement similar to that in 2020, which was kind of particularly kind of put out there by Sinn Féin as well, which is vote left. So it's not a specific pact amongst the political parties, but just a general general indication that you should use your vote ideologically. And so it's a bit more open than a direct kind of transfer agreement, but certainly indicating to voters that they should seek to vote left. Now, the complication in the middle of this is the Green Party and where they position themselves, because they're really, in terms of ideology, but also in terms of the voter base that they're appealing to, very similar to the Labour Party and to the Social Democrats. They do best amongst kind of higher educated, urban, particularly female voters. So they're in the same voter pool, but they are of government at the present time, and so it's more difficult for them to situate themselves. They'll be hoping to benefit from some of the left-leaning transfers, but of course they'll be hoping for some transfers from their government partners, although it's likely in the course of the campaign that the Green Party will take a lot of flack from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. We've already seen signs of that during the local and the European Parliament elections,
where the
Greens were blamed for a lot of what happened.
But Pat Leahy makes the point today that what they did provide to the coalition partners for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael was stability. Like, they went in, they made their deal, and they stuck to it.
Absolutely. And actually, that's one of the kind of critical elements. It's back to where we started our conversation in terms of who will be in the next government. There's been a lot of discussion about independence. And of course, we have had governments before which were based on independence. But parties prefer to deal with other parties, even smaller political parties. They have a unified and clear leadership structure. They have a policy platform, a manifesto. It's easier to engage in negotiations with them. They have whip structures, and they tend to be preferred for those reasons. They provide a type of stability that you don't always get with individual candidates. And each independent, of course, is an individual that has to be negotiated with every time on their own.
Yeah, it takes time.
It takes time, and it's also a bit more reliable to go with the parties. So whilst we'd expect there to be a bit of tension and some kind of robust engagement, outright hostilities will probably be reasonably isolated and probably at local level rather than at leadership level.
We'll see over the next couple of weeks. I just want to come back to that point that Teresa raised on Donald Trump. Because with the uncertainty now of a Trump presidency, it is a sell line, isn't it, for the outgoing government?
Yeah, don't change the horse at this point. We're back very much in that territory of 2007, where the economy is going very strongly, but there are dark clouds potentially on the horizon, both at European, American, and conflict levels. So message from government is going to be: do you really want to take a risk at this point? You can't do anything that you want to do on housing, health, education if you don't have the money to do so. So that's going to be the riposte there. They also have the advantage. The Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael don't have anybody coming at them from the economic right that is questioning their spending. So while the parties on the opposition will say, well, you're wasting money on this and wasting money on that and you're spending too much on this, it's very easy, and we saw this repeatedly with Simon Harris yesterday, for him to turn around and go, well, what social welfare payment would you not pay if you're saying we're splashing cash all over the place? So it means that they can afford to be that bit more flahoolock this time. Certainly Pascal Dunne, who has learnt the lesson of 2020 and is opening up the old purse strings.
As much as he maybe doesn't like doing that. All right, listen, we'll leave it there. Fionnuala Sheehan and Teresa Reilly, thank you both very much. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.